Poof. All right. Well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Cross and the Crescent Discussion Group. This is a Blog Talk radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Islam and Christianity. We are here every Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time and every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time for a couple hours, depending on how interesting the content is and how much you guys can take, because as you watch the show, you don't have to stay here. You go be doing something else on a great sunny day like this. It is, what is the temperature? It is just a beautiful day. It is 78 degrees. Wow. Not too hot, not too cold. I'm surprised you don't have snow yet there, Paul. I mean, it isn't June yet, after all. Okay, just rub it in, right? Yeah. Okay, a couple things. Paul, thank you for hosting the show last Sunday. I appreciate you doing that. Did you guys have a show on Tuesday night? Did you go on BTR? But did you do it on Blog Talk Radio, though? You just did it over there? Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. But I appreciate you doing the show for us last week. We went to, I don't know if you guys ever just driven for like 3 days straight? You want to know, your butt hurts so bad. I got out of the, yeah, and I had to pull a trailer too. So I had to pull the trailer. We were talking about this in prior to the show. I had to pull a trailer. We went across New Mexico. Now, going across New Mexico, like the eastern half of it is kind of greenish. It's like an OD green that the Army had. And on the west side, it's brown. But as you're going through, as long as you get on the, when you get on the west side of Albuquerque, it's like this wind tunnel going through there. And I was down to like 4 miles to the gallon pulling that trailer going west into this headwind. It was just absolutely brutal. I got off and galloped and just said, I'm going to bed. I ain't going to sit here and do this anymore. But anyway, coming back was a lot better because the wind's at your back. And plus it's getting greener and greener and greener as you're going. So it was kind of nice. And got all that taken care of. Let's see here. I got an email this morning from Chris Claus's best friend, Beholder Guard. I sent him a message last night, and I said, like, tomorrow's show's about you. Because I go over to his channel every now, and I post comments in the chat. And one of the comments that I got was from a guy by the name of The Achiever. Have you guys ever heard of this fella? He's got a YouTube channel. Anybody? Never? Okay. John, have you heard of this guy, The Achiever? Anybody? No? Okay. Well, The Achiever said, I posted something on his video, the Beholder Guard's video. It says, the title of it was Exposing Satan's Lost Cause, the Begetter of Bastards. And he's got a picture of Chris and his two kids on there. I mean, who would do that? I mean, anyway. Okay, and so this Achiever guy gets on there. I don't know if this is Beholder Guard's alter ego or whatever, but it says, Eric, don't get involved or I will destroy you. Got that? Okay, so what I did. I know you haven't been watching me, Rad. I've been naughty again. So I send this email to Beholder Guard last night because he had said that, you know, I don't believe in, somewhere he posted, he says, I'm no longer a Christian because the Bible has too many contradictions in it. Is that, now did he, now does he have, I mean, did he change it to Zayed Kerem or? Is he, I thought he was in Greece or something. Is he? Okay. Who was he? He was getting so owned by who? Tippy Bear. That's good. Is she?
I need to do bye-bye.
Ah. No kidding. Well, he... Well, if you watch what he did to Kenny's channel, he had that sucker shut down. I mean, this guy... And I guess he had to get a lawyer or something. But anyway, he said something that I sent the email saying... Let's see, I made tomorrow's show with you in mind. You're welcome to the show if you are first prepared to defend the Kron. But then he ignores that part and says, wouldn't you agree that we need to the Kron of the Bible? No, I want you to defend the Kron. Because every time you say, we're going to talk about the Kron of the Bible, the only thing you guys end up talking about is the Kron. So, no thanks. All right. Well, after he did that to Chris, I just, it makes me doubly not want to engage with that, because what is that woman caught in adultery, you without sin may cast the first stone, so go on ahead. And I don't understand that, why you would do a video on somebody like that. That's just, to me, it's just, that's classless. I mean, you don't have any class if you do something like that. Chris has had, him and his wife had children together before they were married. It was the title. What was the title of that? Let's see. No, the title of that show was, I just had it here. No, that's not it. I just had it here because I was talking about the Avenger or whatever his name was. Exposing Satan's Lost Cause, the Begetter of Bastards. The Achiever was the name of the guy. Sorry, not the Avenger. What? I don't understand. The Begetter of Bastards, right. Satan's Lost Cause, meaning Chris Claus, Lost Cause, Chris Claus is what he was doing. It's just a play on words is all it is. I mean, you think? Well, pull that plank, buddy. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, get that plank out of your own eye. And if you watch some of his videos, and I watched him because of his little blow up with Kenny, and there's just something that just is not set right with that guy. I mean, he talks in the third person all the time, refers to himself in the third person all the time. And if you refer to yourself in the third person that often, I don't know. I mean, if you guys would talk in the third person, I would think that something might be off a little about you. But this is Beholder Guard signing off, and the Beholder Guard, I mean, just like, I don't know. It just is. Yeah, well, one thing, and when they were going through that last year, because we had him on here, when was it, last September, I think it was last September we had him on, and we didn't have him on during a regular show, we just did a separate podcast, because I wanted him to get, tell us his side of the story, because Kenny was making a video about him every single day, and so I thought, well, I'll give this guy a chance to tell his side of the story. Now, whether it was convincing or not, I really don't care, to be honest. I could care less about the thing, but I just didn't like the idea of some self-appointed imam trying to tell everybody else that this guy is not a Muslim or is not whatever, you know, and based on his side of the story. You know, he, during that the dog and pony show that they had, they called the Sharia, no, Shura Council, the Shura Council. They had that thing. And you still, you know, it doesn't matter. But anyway, the guy, I think the guy's smart. I mean, if you look at him, see what the way he's able to do things. If you get some of these YouTube channels, you know, shut down like he did, that was priceless. Right. Okay, they're in the chat. We got the last Adam. Well, who's he going to proselytize to? His children? Grandchildren? I guess you could make that argument, I guess. But and that they have lots of profit, according to Islam. Lot. I mean, say that, Adam. Okay. Does the Bible say that Adam was a prophet? No, it does not. I don't know. I've read... Yeah, we don't have the Book of Adam, do we? Yeah. Okay, so. Is this what you're talking about? Adam, an apostle of the Lord Jesus Christ. I don't understand. What is... Okay. Okay, so... I mean, look at this. If you guys know the truth, because we don't understand the Bible? I mean, are you kidding me? And you're saying that Adam's is a prophet and his apostle? Okay, I mean, when you got somebody that writes something like this, what is the starting point? Where is your starting point with somebody like this? I mean, how do you begin a conversation, a theological conversation, with somebody that thinks that Adam was a prophet and that Adam was an apostle of Jesus Christ? I mean, I don't want to... Paul, did I say that? I don't... Okay. All right. I'm putting him on ignore. He can post all he wants, but I'm just ignore it. I wanted to show you guys something that I did get out because I went to Arizona this past week. We packed up my dad's house and had a little memorial service for him. But there was something that I saw in this house. And when I saw this, I go, you know, those are perfect. And so what I did, oops, where did it go? I did the wrong thing here. Here it is. Nope, that's not it. There it is, right there. I picked up these fellas back here. Now, this guy has been with me for quite a while, but these guys made it a party, and I decided to bring those back here and... I don't know. I haven't named them yet, but don't tempt me, okay? I told you guys that when I was a couple years ago, when my daughter moved, So I got her dog, and her dog's a German Shepherd. His name's Alpha. He's a big old oof. He's a super dog, really good dog. Okay, don't take. You know, I'm not. Don't think I'm trying to disparage him any. But while we're out there playing frisbee, and he, you know, you play this, you know, you throw it, and he goes and catches it, brings it back. So okay, I called him Muhammad during one of them. I posted it on YouTube, and that you wouldn't have believed how much hate I got for how dare you call your dog Muhammad. I bet you wouldn't walk your dog Muhammad in my name. You know, just all kinds of vitriol. So to name a pig Muhammad, I could about imagine how bad it would get. I think somebody would try to get my YouTube channel taken down or something like that. I don't know. That would be... I saw that. What do you guys think of that with him deleting his channel? Let's just go around the table here. Okay, we'll start with Ed, and then we'll go to whoever wants to chime in. But Ed, what do you think of that? Yeah, he's 6'3", 6'4". I know he's a big guy. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think, Paul? Paul's kind of shaking his head now. Paul's not it doesn't look like Paul's approving this message. Yeah. Sure. Okay. After he said that he's going to delete the channel, I'm thinking, doesn't that seem like a little drastic? He's got 680,000 subscribers. I just checked. 680,000. I don't even have 680, okay? This guy's got 680,000 subscribers. And to take that and just burn it to the ground, to me, well, I get having a completely new platform, but hold on, let me... Yeah, well, what I'm saying is the reach. Like, and I get you had what's his nuts, the Cowardly Lion of Dawa, Marshall Gregory, reporting me all, and bragging about sending me screenshots. I reported you for this. Hey, I got your channel taken down. I got you banned. I got you deleted or whatever. You know, and to think that there's people out there like that. That's all they want to do is try to silence you is just absolutely absurd. If you want to go after somebody, why not just engage them on topic? Why not, you know, I'm starting to talk like Issa here. Engage them on topic. Quit trying to fight this freedom of speech thing. You're absolutely right, Ed. You have this ability. I mean, this is the United States of America. You know, we have freedom of speech here. And regardless of how you try, and this is why we have a website. We have the website, thecrossandthecrescent.com. And these videos are supposed to be downloaded every week there. I don't know if it's still doing. I haven't been there for a while, but these videos get downloaded to that website. Now, where's Rad? Rad isn't here. He was here, then he's gone. We were doing the number of visits to that, and we hadn't touched it for a year. And we finally went in about, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, and it was getting all kinds of hits. We were getting all kinds of hits on the website versus the YouTube channel. And I'm thinking maybe that is the way to go. Have your own separate website where people cannot, they cannot censor what you say. And if you have people reporting you, who are you going to report me to? You know, I'm the owner of the website. And then he was talking about doing his own advertising, and that may be, you know, a viable option. He was, what was the name of that? It was a VPN or something that, yeah, so he said he gets money from that. So that, I don't know, that may be the way to go. But to me, it just seems a little drastic to completely burn that bridge. But, you know, he's, like Ed was saying, the guy's brilliant. And so, you know, it's his channel. Matt Slick's organization, yeah. I was in a, I know you're going to be shocked, but I was in a clubhouse room with Matt a couple weeks ago, and he is brilliant. I disagree with him on a couple things, but that's, I mean, I disagree with Paul on all kinds of things too. Yeah. Yeah, and it's a fun thing about being a Christian, because we don't have to worry about chopping each other's heads off and calling each other infidels for not agreeing with them. Are you an infidel? You're a heretic. Cut your head off. Okay, 30 minutes into the show, I'm sure nobody's going to be watching the first half of this show. We're sitting here bloviating, talking about nothing. We're going to talk about biblical contradictions today. Am I hearing an echo back there somewhere? Okay, let's see here. Let's share our screen. I've done this for a while, so I better get used to it. Okay, here we are. Biblical contradictions. Are there contradictions in the Bible? Now, this is based on, I can't take credit for this as much as I would like to. So if you're going to blame somebody, email Dr. J. Smith and complain to him. A lot of this material is taken from a paper that he wrote, because it dealt with a debate that he had with Shabir Ali based on biblical contradictions, or going through and noting some of the contradictions that Shabir makes and other Islamic doubts make against the Bible. So the first thing you got to do is understand what a contradiction is. And according to Webster's, it's a combination of statements, ideas, or features of a situation that are opposed to one another. Now, opposed means that they do not agree. They're supposed, and here's the great, I don't know, have you guys ever heard of R.C. Sproul? R.C. Sproul? Okay. Okay, so this is the way that R.C. Described a contradiction. He says that A cannot be non-A at the same time and in the same relationship. So in other words, I cannot be my father's dad. I can be a father, I can be a dad, I can be a son, but I cannot be my father's dad in the same time, in the same relationship. So it'd be just a contradiction. So when we think about that in an illustration, we make applications in these examples that we're going to use, you'll see what I mean by that. I got to sneeze. Okay, so does the Bible contain contradictions? Yeah, thank you. I hadn't sneezed for a week, and I got home. That stupid cat. That cat. Stop. Okay, I'm just going to get off of that. I think that cat is just. Anyway, all right. And then lastly, we're going to make applications of these things. Okay, so, and I can't remember which one of you alluded to it earlier, but you mentioned the Quran affirming what the Bible says. So if the Quran's going to affirm what the Bible says, how can you say that the Bible has contradictions in it? That makes no sense at all. Why would a book affirm or say that, tell you to look to this book if it contains contradictions in it or errors? It makes zero sense to me at all. But if you look in Surah 2, verse 136, it says, "We believe in Allah and on that which is revealed unto us and that which is revealed unto Abraham, Ishmael, and Isaac, and to Jacob, and the tribes of that which Moses and Jesus received." Notice that. Which Moses and Jesus received from their Lord. We make no distinction between any of them, and unto him we have surrendered. So he's making no distinction between what? That which was revealed to the prophets, so-called. At least he got this. I don't know. Was Ishmael considered a prophet? Then why would he include that? I mean, why would the Allah of the universe, which supposedly authored the Quran or the Bible, he interpreted dreams anyway, but that's prophesying, I guess. Let's see. I just read to the chat here. Call Me Mom is here today. Call Me Mom is, you know her, Paul. She's been there forever, longer than any of us, I think. She's Superwoman. Okay. Contradiction. Oh, here we are. This is a good one. Contradictions are opportunities for study. You're exactly right on that one. Okay. And then you go to chapter 3, verses 2 and 3. There is no God save him, the alive, the eternal. He hath revealed unto thee the scripture with truth, confirming that which was revealed when? Before it. He revealed what? The Torah and the gospel. If he revealed the Torah and the gospel, and here he's saying that, you know, they received this from their Lord, you're telling you to go look at it, it doesn't make any sense at all. Let the people of the gospel judge by which Allah hath revealed therein. So we're supposed to judge what he has revealed where? In the Bible. So if we are going to... So silly. We're supposed to look at the Bible. We're supposed to judge by the Bible, but the Bible is contradictory. The Bible is full of errors. That makes that much sense. Zero sense at all. Exactly. The book, right? Yeah. The Bible doesn't say the Bible in it. Therefore, it makes it not true, right? Yeah. And I've heard so many objections that kind of rattle around in your head. Verse 49, so judge between them which Allah has revealed. People of the book, stand fast by the law, the gospel, and all revelation that hath come to you from your Lord. This is silly to say that the Bible has contradictions in it, and it has errors, if you're using the same standard for the Bible as you are for the Quran. But we know that they never would. Anyway, all right. So what I want to do is the objection or the apparent contradiction, and then give you the answer. But before I do that, I want to give you an illustration here of what we're up against here. Okay, you have an objection. He says, have you guys ever heard this one? Where does Jesus say, I'm God, worship me? I'm just going to give... Well, here's the way I feel about this. If somebody ever asked me that question, this is where the answer would be. I would say it's in the Injil. If you want to find where Jesus says, I am God, worship me, it's in the Injil. Now you show me that, the Injil, and I'll find it for you. Well, that's true. Yeah, exactly. Why are you guys getting ahead of me? Why are you guys getting ahead of me? You're getting ahead of me. Slow down. Golly, guys. This is supposed to be kind of a humorous way to attempt to do this. Okay, I'd say it's in the Injil. Well, where's the Injil? Well, we don't know. Okay, well then fine. I'm saying it's in the Injil. You're making up the Injil? Okay, I'm going to make it in the Injil. How about it's located right next to the passage where Jesus says he is the Messiah. At the woman of the well. Does he say that I am the Messiah? Does he say that to the woman at the well? No. She infers that. So not the phonic fallacy, but I think this is the exact words fallacy that you're referring to, Paul, is why does Jesus have to say, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Are you kidding? What is that? Condemnators told them to judge by what, okay, whatever, don't care. But anyway, yeah, who cares? All right. Okay, now he always says that it's always too late in, where's he, the Philippines? Am I right on that? He says, it's always, I can never come because it's too late wherever I am. Well, then what are you doing up? I mean, dude, go get some sleep. All right, John 8, okay, so he does say he is God, though. If you look at John 8:58, he says, before Abraham was, I am, ego eimi, and this is the... Okay, so, go ahead. Exactly. So, and it basically means it's you're saying that you're eternally self-existent. Now, if you look at what it says, and somebody says, well, that's kind of a nuanced way of saying something like that. Okay. Thank you. That's silly, because if you look at John 8:59, what do they do in John 8:59 after he says this? Do they fall down and worship him at his feet and say, oh, we love you, Jesus. You say that you're God. We love it. No. They say they picked up rocks to stone him. Why? Why would they do that? Because he's claiming to be God. Right. Boy, we got the works going on here today in the chat. Way to go. Okay, another place that we can answer this silly question is Thomas says, what does Thomas say? My Lord and my God. Now, if you read verse 29, Jesus says, shut your mouth. Don't you ever blaspheme me like that. I am not your God. Is this? Okay, exactly. It's not there. You would expect it to be there if the fact was is that he was not teaching that he was God. Emi bigger the street, same word in John 9:9 does not Jiminy Christmas. You know, this is what desperation looks like. Folks, you want to see what desperation looks like? This is what it looks like. That's what it looks like. You didn't even spell it right. So when you spell it right, you let me know. All right. And then, of course, he receives worship. He receives worship from the blind man. He's worshipped by the leper. He's worshipped by the angels. In Hebrews 1:6, and if you even look in Philippines, this is the guy who does to me. I mean, the Philippians. Yeah. They wanted their frequent flyer miles for the month, don't you see? That's what they had. Okay, and then in Philippians 2:10, everyone, that's the Carmen Christi, he's worshipped by everyone. Okay, so this is just kind of how we're going to do this. We're going to put the objection or the supposed contradiction, and then we'll provide the evidences showing that it's not a contradiction. Okay, so just real quick, there's a couple of give-me's here. I mean, these are easy. Second Samuel gives the total population for Israel is 800,000, whereas First Chronicles says it was 1,100,000. As a matter of fact, Mary, if you want to come in, let me post this, because there's one that we were going to do here that I listened to you. Where'd it go? It's being hidden. There it is. We talked about who Jesus's father is according to Matthew and Luke. And I was listening to you in Clubhouse one. I know you guys are shocked that I was in Clubhouse one night, listening to Mary get this answer, but she gave a completely different answer than that I had given. Anyway, all right, so what is the answer here? The answer to this is you have a census. This is where these numbers come from. They come a census, but some censuses will include numbers that others will not. For an example, if you took a census of the United States in, let's say, 1854, if you took a census of the United States in 1854, would we count everybody? I need that Jeopardy music. Right. Okay. And the quick answer is no, because we would not count slaves, would we? The reason why we wouldn't count slaves is because of the Three-Fifths Compromise written into the Constitution. The reason why that they were counting people is for apportionment in the House of Representatives. The more people that you have in your state, the more representatives you have in Congress, the more representatives you have in the House of Representatives. Right. Yes. But right. So when we look at the more people that you have, the more representatives you have, and you'd have more power as a state. So they would not count everybody. Well, here you have different categories of people that you would count and that you would not count. So in one census, you would count all of the men, and the other ones you do not. And then the purpose of the one was to determine the fighting age. You know, of who are the men that are available for the fighting age, or you could say the ones that are ready for battle. So if you look at the word here, let's see, where is it at? Hagiel, which means mighty men, those are the ones that are seasoned troops. These are the ones that would be people who had been in combat before, whereas you'd have an additional 300 maybe like conscripts or new recruits or something on those lines. So it's just a different way of counting them. So there isn't a contradiction here at all. Okay, let's go to another one. Here you have Uzziah. Was he 22 or 42 when he began to rule over Jerusalem? You guys heard this one before? Okay. So all this basically is a copy of errors. Are there copy of errors in the Bible? There are. They're copy of errors. Why? Because they're transcribed by human beings. Human beings are known to do something. It begins with or make something. It begins with an M and ends with a stake. They are known to make mistakes. Here's where Muslims love to argue that with the Quran and its perfect preservation. And we've seen this shtick fall completely to pieces in the last, 2 years? Or maybe it's just, was it 2 years? Has it been 2 years or has it only been a year? I think it's been 2 years since. Yeah, J. Smith's got 37 different Qurans, and they've been counting the differences between just two of them, the Hafs and the Wash. I think they're up to like 9,000 differences, variants. Now, that doesn't mean that they're intentional errors. That doesn't mean that they intentionally went out and meant to change something. They just people make errors, or they forget to write something down. They forget a word. They add a word. They didn't have Webster's Dictionary back then, so they misspell a word. So these things happen because you have humans doing this. So we know he was 22 when this happened. And the reason why is because, let's see here, it says he mentions that his father had Ahab when he was 32, when he became king, and that died 8 years later at the age of 40. So you cannot say that Uzziah was 42 when he dies at the age of 40. That makes no sense at all. So this is absurd to say that this is a huge contradiction when we know it's a scribal error. We know here's the beauty of it. We can go back to the oldest manuscripts that we possibly have. Keep in mind, they weren't burned. Just saying. By Christians anyway. They weren't burned intentionally to cover up the mistakes. So we are allowed to go back and look at these and try to figure out. It's called textual criticism, oh, by the way, which they don't have in the Quran. We were allowed to go back and make these. Say that again. Right, but they can't. So we are doing it for them. Oh, I was going to make a mention of something else, and I don't mean to backtrack here. Jay was interviewing, I can't remember who, I think it was Mel or somebody. What Mel is doing, or something, I can't, it doesn't matter. What he's basically saying is that we can see that the Quran developed from Aramaic Christian literature, homilies, hymns, stories. Yeah, I was going to order something here because there was two books that he had cited on that. And I was, let's see. Come on. The Syro-Aramaic Reading of the Quran, a contribution to the something, Christopher Luxembourg. And then there's another one by Gunter Luling, Challenge to Islam for Reformation. And both of these, what was the other one that you just said, Ed? Okay. All right. Well, the whole premise of this is absolutely fascinating to me. And I was going to order these two books, but it's going to cost me $70, I see. But that's okay. well, they're in PDF. They're in PDF, though. So I think I'm going to get them on PDF. Right. And, well, where does the Arabic, where did Arabic develop from? And that is the Aramaic. But what he was saying is it was something about the diacritical marks when they were going there and they went when they read because the classical Arabic did not have diacritical marks. It's like an alphabet without vowels. Well, right. Well, it's like you and I trying to read Beowulf in the original English. It'd be very, very, very difficult to do that. You know, we could understand parts of it, but we wouldn't be able to understand everything to it. And this is where he was. He used I think it was verse 20, chapter 23. If you guys want to bring that up, and he goes through. You can see where it's this Christian prayer, the Quran. And it's like a Christian homily. I'll bring it up. And he wanted to show the beauty of the prayer itself, but in doing so, it's completely, he uses the word, the bastardization. Let me pull this over here. And he said he felt bad about using the word, but it fit perfectly. So let's bring this back up over here. So certainly will the believers have succeeded. And then it goes, those who are during their prayer humbly submissive, and those who turn away from ill speech. Now watch what happens when we get to verse 6. And they who are observant of zakat, meaning zakat paying your tithings. And then you get number 5, and they guard their private parts, or those who guard their modesty. Now, watch what happens in verse 6 and 7 to this, because what he says is that it's an insertion to this prayer. This is what this completely fascinated me. It goes on to say in verse 6, come on, let's go to verse 6. Except, okay, now notice it says you guard your chastity, except, now all you do all these things, except from their wives who their right, or those their right hand possesses, for indeed they will not be blamed. So you can, don't have to be chaste to just one woman here, or your sex slaves. And then in verse 7, it says, but whoever is beyond them, then those are the transgressors. Then, if you have these two terrible verses inserted in here, you get back to verse 8, you get back to the original Christian prayer, who are separate their play and their covenant, and you can read the rest. You can pick up the Quran and go through your own penance reading that Hamajama. But what he's saying here is the whole premise is that, Mary says it right perfect here. They remove the Right there. They ruined the poetic flow right there. That's well said, yeah. So you have this beautiful poem, and then the people are like, well, what about if you have more than one wife? Or what about if you have sex slaves? Well, the Abbasids did all these things. So the thought process is that it was the Abbasids who introduced that into this old Christian homily, and then trying to make it into some type of sacred book or sacred writing. Anyway, I thought when we looked at those, go ahead. Because he's not the good shepherd, that's why. Yeah, it's just amusing when you hear stuff like that too, because a goat ate 114 verses or something. Oh, it was Aisha, wasn't it? Yeah, there you go. It was Aisha. My dog ate the homework type. All right, let's chat. Okay, let's see. Very little manuscripts, Quran make textual criticism. Okay, let's get back to the slideshow. Okay, here we go. Here's, did Solomon appoint 3,600 overseers to build the temple, or was it only 3,300 according to First Kings? So you have in Second Chronicles 2:2, there's 3,600 overseers, and then in First Kings it says it's only 3,300. So does that appear like a contradiction? Well, you would say, okay, now maybe it was a copyist error. Could it be a copyist error? You could make that. I think you could make that argument. It was just a copyist error. But here's the thing: what in the Hades does 3,600 and 3,300 have to do with your salvation? This is how desperate they are. Right. Okay. And that's exactly, who are you including when you count? This is like doing the census. So here you have Second Chronicles is including 300 people who were selected as reservists. Because if you don't, it's like substitute teachers, Paul, or if you were going to count the number of teachers in your school district, would you count it as a teacher in your school district if you're a substitute? Okay, could you be counted? Okay, you could be counted by one person to be a substitute or as a teacher because but could they say that we have 3,600 teachers in our school district and we have to include an additional, or we have 3,300 school, let's say we have 3,300 school teachers in our district, but we have to have 300 additional teachers as substitute teachers without making the delineation there. So you could, and this is what he's doing here. You're going to have people that are going to fill in when those workers cannot. So what you're doing is, you're counting, the people who are actively working, and the other, you just have those that include those people that would have to come in because of sickness, injury, or if somebody dies, because people were known to die earlier back then. So it just depends on how you count them. So it doesn't have to match completely. And the bottom line is what in the Hades does this have to do with our salvation? Yeah. But of course there's always explanations for that, whereas in the Bible, there cannot be an explanation because it says it plain and simple. right? Where's your detail here, buddy? Exactly. Okay. All right. Now, this is the one I wanted Mary to come up on, because I was Mary was in a clubhouse room a couple weeks ago, and she gave an explanation on why in Matthew, when they're going through the genealogies of Christ, does Matthew mentioned Joseph. Let me see. Who says that Joseph? Let's see. Jacob was in Matthew, and Heli is in Luke. Okay, no, this is the father of Mary. Okay, that's right. I'm thinking, no, it's supposed to say Joseph. Or no, see, the father of Joseph and husband of, okay. Here is one way to look at this, and I don't, let me go back to the chat here. I didn't look at the chat, sorry. I didn't see if Mary was still there. Okay, here's the answer. Number one, Matthew gives the genealogies of Joseph. Now, why does Matthew give the genealogies of Joseph? Because Matthew is more focused on the legalistic perspective, the legalistic. Why is Jesus legally a descendant of David? And that is determined by who your father is. You follow the genealogy that way. Where Luke goes through Mary's father because Mary or Jesus did not have an earthly father. And he's thinking biologically. So when you look at Matthew, he's looking at from Joseph's perspective, and you look at Luke, it's going through Mary's perspective. Now, both of them establish a lineage of from David to the both parents, and the important part is that Matthew is looking at it from a legalistic point of view, where Luke, being a doctor, is looking at it from a biological point of view. So there is, it isn't a contradiction. It's just whose parents are you tracing your ancestry through? Luke is saying it's biological, because Jesus had no father. And then Matthew is saying it's Joseph or it's Jacob. It's Joseph's father because legally, according to Jewish law, it has to go through the father. Go ahead, Ed. Right, because that's what the Gospels are. They're a collection of separate accounts of what Christ did. And this is the problem with saying that this is the Injil. It's a book given to Jesus. Now, who would say something like that? What kind of idiot? Let me step back here. Who would believe it was a... That just might be it, right? Who would say that it was a book given to Jesus? Somebody that cannot read, that doesn't understand what the gospel is. The gospel is actually a verb. It's the good news of what Christ did for us. So when you talk about the gospels, these are a proclamation or a telling of the good news from four different perspectives. Matthew, being the tax collector, is going to be looking at it from a legal point of view. Why? Because he dealt with the law when collecting taxes all the time. Whereas Luke, getting it from Mary, but Luke looking at it as a doctor would, he would not think that Joseph was the father if the gospel message is true, and that part of the gospel message is Jesus had a virgin birth. So why would Joseph, according to the law, be counted as Jesus's father? Well, if you discount the law, if you're just looking at it from a purely biological view, I think I'm getting confused here. The point, what does it say? The point, because their point is Jesus has two different fathers according to them. Okay. Okay. What is it with Mary? What are you doing here? Allah's so impressed with their Bible, he thinks God wrote. Okay, let's go to this next one. Where am I? Right there. Jesus first met Simon Peter and Andrew by the Sea of Galilee, or on the banks of the River Jordan. So, the answer is, look at a map. Location, 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 location. That's all you have to do. If you look at a map, now I'm going to bring up a map here, and you're going to see by looking at this map, here you have the Jordan River. The Jordan River flows into the Sea of Galilee through here, okay, and then it flows out on the south end, it's called the Rift Valley, all the way down to the Dead Sea. So when we think of, okay, did he meet them on the sea or the shores of the Jordan or the shores of the Sea of Galilee? If you called this the Jordan River, could you call the Sea of Galilee the Jordan River if the Jordan River is indeed flowing straight through it? Yeah, that's too easy. You could do that. I mean, so you don't have to sit here and say, okay, well, it can't be, or this has to be a contradiction because it mentions the banks of the Jordan, it mentions the Sea of Galilee right here. Let's see, let me get back up here. Okay, so right here, when it's flowing in here, is this, if you're sitting on the shore right here, are you sitting on the shore of the Sea of Galilee or are you sitting on the shore of the Jordan? All right. So, but my point is that you can call it either or and still be accurate. But the bottom line in the great scheme of things for my salvation, does this have anything to do with our salvation? Nothing. When all you're trying to do is you're trying to find reasons to try to weaken somebody else's faith or to try to justify your own. Because notice, this is what happens invariably. I'm going to get to the Great Commission's comment here in just a second. But the reason why they come after the Bible like this and try to tear it down, make criticism, and there's nothing wrong with criticizing the Bible. I'm all for looking at the Bible and criticizing. I mean, well, I was looking this morning. As a matter of fact, we had a great discussion this morning in my Sunday school's class in Hebrews chapter 6, verses 4 through 6. You know, can somebody that has the faith in Christ, that is saved, who walks away from their faith, come back to their faith? Can somebody do that? My answer, my belief is that they can. But if you read in Hebrews, Paul is alluding to something that's very, you know, it's highly interpretive. It can seem very problematic. But the bottom line is that when you go looking for what you think are contradictions, you know what you're going to find? You're going to find contradictions. But when you go looking for the truth, you know what you're going to find? You're going to find the truth. Yeah. So the bottom line is that, you know, they're going to say, oh, it's the Sea of Galilee, is the Jordan River. Which one is it? Well, it's both. You can be sitting on the banks of the Jordan right here and still be sitting on the banks of the Sea of Galilee. So it all depends on where you're at. But here in Capernaum is where the joy of Jesus' ministry occurred. As a matter of fact, there's a synagogue that he taught in that's been excavated there. They've excavated actually Peter's there, which is pretty cool. Okay, I want to get the Great Commission's comment here when he talks about Lineage of Mary and the necessity for her being the seed of a woman from the Proto-Evangelium, which we find in Genesis 3:15. So that's a great point that it had to come through there and to make that. I'm going to sneeze again to make that allusion. To make that, golly, I should have taken my, Allegra D. I should have taken one this morning. Okay, here in John 19:17, it says that Jesus bore his cross. In Matthew, it says that he did not. So which one is right? Did he carry his cross or not? Well, this is kind of like the argument with the thieves on the cross type deal, and we're going to go to that one here in a minute too. So, and the only reason why I'm addressing this one is because that Asana guy that was on here, I don't know, a while ago, a year ago or whatever, brought this up. He says, well, it was Simon the Cyrene that carried his cross. So this one is incorrect, and plus it says that Simon the Cyrene is the one that was on the cross. It doesn't say that at all, but in order to make the Quran work, that you have to distort sacred scripture. Yeah, you have to get very creative, right? So it says in John 19:17, it says he's going out carrying his cross in place of Golgotha, the skull. But Matthew, it says that he was led out to be crucified. And as they're going, that Simon the Cyrene was forced to carry his cross. So did Jesus carry his cross? Yes, according to John and both Matthew, but did Jesus carry this cross the whole way? No, he did not. So it's not a contradiction to say that Jesus did not carry his cross. Let's see. And then Simon the Cyrene. How would you like to be Simon the Cyrene here? I mean, you're just coming into town. Yeah. Now, when we have these differing stories, let me just put it back up here. Does this look like a contradictory? Why did I do that? There we go. Does this look like a contradiction? You have one saying that he carried his cross out of the place of the skull, or out to the place of the skull. And then you have this one saying that it was Simon was forced to carry the cross. So is in Matthew, is it saying that Simon carried the cross? Exactly. Okay, so when you have, say that again, Darcy, I didn't hear you. Okay, if these Gospels were all exactly the same and you didn't have variations in them as we do here, where one says that it appears that Jesus carried it the whole way, well, Matthew says, no, Jesus went out carrying it, but Simon the Cyrene carried it. If they were all exactly the same, you would have something called collusion going on here. And when you talk about eyewitness testimony, if it's exactly the same in every single detail, then you know these guys are colluding together. You know these people are colluding together because they've made up the story and they've made sure that their every single last detail and fact fits. Whereas if you have variance in here, we say, well, he did carry the cross to Golgotha. And then over here it says that he went out carrying the cross, but Simon the Cyrene. Well, you know that there's truth to this statement because one just doesn't mention that Simon Cyrene carried the cross part of the way. Just because it doesn't mention that, does that mean that it's not true? Does it mean that the two statements are contradictory? No, it doesn't mean it at all. It just means we have two different perspectives of the same event. You want to hear something funny? I did an experiment before I did a show. This is a couple years ago. It was talking about this. I went and I asked my mom, my mother-in-law, my wife, my sister-in-law, and my father. I had five different people, and I asked them all kinds of questions about my wedding. And I asked them, okay, what day of the week was the wedding on? Where was the wedding located? Who was my best man in the wedding? What song did you sing in the wedding? And my father-in-law sang a song. He doesn't remember it at all. He doesn't remember singing in the wedding. Because I did sing in the wedding. I said, dude, I got it on videotape. You did sing in the wedding. Now, just because he thinks that he didn't sing in the wedding or he doesn't remember the name of the song, does that mean that he wasn't at the wedding? No. Just because somebody didn't know the name of my best man doesn't mean that they were in the wedding? No, it doesn't. So just because you can't recall all of the details that you have may not be the same does not mean that they were not there and were not able to record the same events. And I did this. Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, because if you don't think it's important to mention what the song was, then one story might say what the song. Well, your father-in-law got up and sang a song, and the other one doesn't mention the song at all. Does it mean that they weren't at the wedding because he doesn't mention the song? No. The same thing is true here. Just because John doesn't mention Simon the Cyrene doesn't mean that Simon the Cyrene didn't carry the cross. He just didn't think it was important enough to mention. That's a better way to put it. Thank you, Paul. Yeah, I mean, you're normally a father-in-law. You're boo-hooing is normally what you're doing if you're the father-in-law. Was he even capable of carrying a cross that far? You're absolutely right. I mean, the condition he had? There was a condition where he was in shock. Yeah. It's rapid blood loss is what it's from. When we do the right. Okay, so let's look at this next one. This next one's kind of silly also. It's kind of the same thing. Okay, you have two thieves that were crucified with Jesus. Did they mock him or did they not mock him? Because two thieves criticized Jesus. Or mock him in Mark, but in Luke, they do not. As a matter of fact, one of them says that you are the Son of God, the Christ. We deserve this. So what's the problem with this? Well, I'll tell you. Do you guys remember that book series Left Behind? With Tim LaHaye? Okay, that was a great book series. I had all the books and read them, and they had a website, and on this website they had like a bulletin board. And when you get on this bulletin board, you have people, I mean, they just got brutal. And I could see why they finally said, look, we're shutting down this bulletin board because you all suck. I mean, you're just being cruel and mean, and you're Christians to each other on this bulletin board. So I could see why they shut it down. But that's where I kind of cut my teeth getting into Christian apologetics was on this bulletin board. It was like 1998 or so, 99, whatever, that series when it came out and was popular. But this was a question that was posed, and this is what kind of got me interested in all of this. And I'm thinking, well, what if they did it at different times? Because once you get nailed to the cross, you're like, ow, that's going to hurt. And you're going to get a case of angry because you are hurt. So you're going to look to revile anyway, because you're not the main guy being crucified there. I mean, who's the main guy? I mean, the guy that gets in between the two thieves, he's the main guy getting crucified. The other people could care less about you. So they're reviling him. So I'm thinking at the same time they're reviling him. But when the thief comes to terms with what's happening to him and who this man is, this is where he stops reviling him. And he's telling him, you know, Jesus, remember me when we go to the Father. So Jesus tells him, you will be with me this day in paradise. Okay, so could he have been reviling him at the beginning, the time that he was on the cross? Yeah. And then is it possible where he does not revile him? Exactly. So here's the answer to this. And this is what I posted. Right, and this is where a realization of who this guy was comes about. So this is this is where it says that one of them mocked him and the other one did not, where you could say, you can make that recollection at the end where one is mocking him, but the other one did not. Mark says that both of them did, and that could be true at the same time. At the beginning when they're on the cross, they both could be mocking him and reviling him, but at the end, the other one could come back and defend him, like it says in Luke. So the conclusion to this is that both of them mocked him initially, where at the end where Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they know what they do, this other one comes to a realization of who Jesus really is. So this is not a contradiction at all. All right, let's get to this one. Does anybody have anything else they want to add to that? I don't want to go too fast on these. Anybody? Yeah, what they say about that, Darcy, is that that's probably the most accurate depiction of what crucifixion was like. The scourging scene, my God, the scourging scene, folks, that is just, you just can't sit there, you can't. Yeah, I mean, that it's just brutal. God. But yeah, so when you look at the scourging scene itself, and then you start making, you know, these assumptions, because one of the objections, somebody said, well, go ahead, Ed. Well, one of the objections that people have is what Pilate said. They said, well, Pilate was surprised that he had died so fast. So this is one of these 4:157 things. Well, he didn't die on the cross. Why? Well, Pilate said that he didn't die. Or Pilate knew that he didn't die because he had died so quickly. Well, he had died so hyperbolic shock. That's what it's called. He was in hyperbolic shock. Why? Because of the rapid blood loss that had occurred. If you get scourged and whipped like that, if you watch that, like Darcy mentioned that in the Passion of the Christ, and you see what that was like, you don't live through something like that. Yeah, when you're hanging there, when you're with your hands up like this and you're hanging there, you put too much pressure on your chest and you cannot exhale. So you have to push up to relieve the pressure with feet. This is why they broke the legs of the thieves, is to have them to die quicker. And this is the exact argument you would have against this idea that Jesus swooned on the cross. You don't swoon. Go ahead, Ed. Well, he says he willingly lay down his life, so yeah, absolutely. But to go back to this swoon theory thing where Ed was talking about how you suffocate, and this is true, they would know, these Roman soldiers would know that somebody that has been crucified was dead when they're not pushing up with their feet anymore, meaning that if you're hanging there and you're suffocating and you're not pushing up with your feet, that means that you're not breathing. And if you're not breathing, you're going to die. So if somebody is not pushing up, this Roman soldier, especially if you're not pushing up for 15 minutes, that person's dead. That's how they knew that Jesus was dead. So this idea that he swooned, even on top of that, he had somebody shove a piercer spear into his heart. hello, you're not going to survive that one. But they would come back and they broke the thieves' legs. Why? So they didn't want the thieves push up anymore. If the thieves didn't push up anymore, what are they going to do? They're going to suffocate to death. That's why they broke their legs and didn't break Jesus' legs. He died of what? A doctor, you're saying? Well, how does that happen? Okay, we have Danny Davis in the chat. Devil Davis, according to some self-proclaimed imam. Devil, can you tell God Logic that I'd like to have him on the show this Tuesday if he would want to come? Because I sent a message to him and he said that he would love to come to the show sometime, so I'd like to have him. So just ask him. If not, I'll send him another message on Clubhouse. See if we can get him here on Tuesday. Okay, and if you guys haven't been over to God Logic's YouTube channel, you need to get up, not now, but after the show is over, you need to get over and see what he does, because some of these live sessions, he was with, who is the Sheikh? Fibin Farouk or whatever his name is. Yeah. He posted a video, I think it was last week, because I was watching it. I wasn't watching it as I'm driving out to Kafiristan West, but it was a classic. And also there was another video where some little munchkin come running out of the tent and wanted to give him a beatdown or something. I'm like, dude, you're going to get your butt kicked. I mean, and Danny, he was calming me. He's like, dude, just stand back before you get squished here. That was little man syndrome right there. The Uthman Fibin, let's see, Ibn, how do you say that? Uthman Fibin for Futnet. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that, and this is, if you listening to Farouk, the Sheikh, the one that has a master's degree in Ahadith, go through that. I'm trying to explain. I mean, when you have to go through that much explanation to make a point, you know you've lost the argument. He was doing gymnastics because God Logic asked him, I want you to show me where all prophets or all messengers are the Messiah. Something along those lines. And this is what the whole, I can't remember how the whole argument goes, but the fact was is that he's completely destroying the English language and trying to make the point that Jesus was a Messiah but not the Messiah. He's basically removing the meaning of the word in the passage that he was citing. So when you get over there, go ahead and take a look at it. You can see what I'm talking about. If you had to do that many gymnastics in order to make your point work, you know that you're in trouble. You know that you're wrong. It was like that guy that we had on here, Black Hebrew Israelites, Dula. Dula was trying to tell us that all of the apostles were black. And the reason why he's trying to tell us that all of the apostles are black, don't you see, is that you have to read Acts. It was in Acts. Let me go through this here. And I was just astonished that somebody could be that obtuse. But then again, you know, somebody that uses racism to justify their religion or to propagate their religion. I don't see why they don't do that. It says, meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murders. No, was this it? No, it was chapter 13. That was chapter 9. Okay. Now in the church at Antioch, listen, listen how this is written. Now, everybody that was in the church of Antioch is black. Here's why. Listen to this. Now in the church at Antioch, there were prophets and teachers, Barnabas, Simeon, called Niger, meaning black, Lucius of Cyrene, Manian, who had been brought up with Herod the Tetrarch, and Saul. So when it says that Simeon called Niger, that means everybody was black there. But this is what desperation looks like, though. When you have to do this, when you have to go through this many mental gymnastics or use of the language in order to get it, what you're doing is it's called eisegesis. You're trying to impose your own meaning onto a certain passage. And this is what the guy was doing. So was Thibon Farouk, who was doing the same exact thing with this passage, trying to say that that all of the prophets were messiahs. Liar is exactly what you are. What did Nimrod say? It's that Munchkin has a Simeon. What are you talking about here? If you look at this guy. Oh yeah, in that video. Golly, that was hilarious. I mean, he would have got his butt kicked. Yeah, so he's putting on a show to act all big and bad, knowing that he can act all big and bad that he wants to, that they're not going to knock him on his can. I don't know. Danny showed great restraint. Let's just put it that way. Way to go, Danny. Don't let it go to your head, though. Okay, let's go back. Let's get back to this. But Danny's a big guy. I mean, he's like a foot taller than this pipsqueak. And all you had to do is just boink, get away. You could have done that, but he didn't even do that. Okay, let's get back to, the favorite apostle of most of the Dowagandists is Paul. So it says, when Paul was on the road to Damascus, he saw a light and heard a voice. Did those who were with him hear the voice, or did they not? And this is an apparent contradiction, because in one book, it says that they did hear a voice, and the other one, it says they did not. Is this a contradiction? No. When you look at the Greek word in both of these accounts, I don't even know how to pronounce it there. It has it has two distinct meanings: to perceive and to understand. So to perceive something or to understand something can basically be the same thing. So it is, when we look at this, they heard something but did not understand what he was saying. But Paul, on the other hand, heard it and understood it. So you can still use the same word, but having two different meanings, two different applications, and it still works out. Not their own sources, because you're absolutely right, because it says right here, this is yucky. I'm going through the Sirah. That's why I said yucky, because it was just talking about a little girl, and we know what happens with little girls in Muhammad. Here it is. Okay, those whom Jesus, son of Mary, sent, both disciples and those who came after him, the land were Peter, the disciple, and Paul with what? Paul. Paul belonged to the followers. But it says Paul was not a disciple. It's in parentheses, though. It's not part of the original. What page? Yeah. Okay, but no, it's, and this is where they have to try to disparage Paul, because you can't disparage the original disciples who lived with Christ. you have to go after Paul. Paul has to be the boogeyman in all of this. Who says this? Messenger destroyed. Allah says, where does it say this on here?
Third message. Oh yeah, okay. The names of the first two messages were Shimon and Yohanan, and the third was Bulus, right there. Yep, Bulus is Paul.
Very good. Now, what did you say was wiped from their head? Really? What do they call it? The Streisand effect, where you try to cover it up, it makes it more, people go looking for it harder. Have you guys ever seen the fatwa? It was a fatwa saying that Muhammad sighed Aisha. Okay, that was taken down because I went to find that and they took that down. It was it's a fatwa from somebody. I think it was in Saudi Arabia. A Saudi Arabian imama said that. Was it Iranian? Okay, yeah. Iranians are, never mind, not going there, get myself in trouble. Okay, so did Jesus buy a field with money from betraying Jesus, or did he throw it into the temple, as he said in Matthew? So in Acts, you have that Judas bought a field with the money, and then in Matthew says it was thrown in the temple from where the priest used it to buy a field. So one passage is only the summary of the other. It's not specific or explicit, where Matthew describes in detail, because in Acts it's just summarizing things, where Matthew does not use cliff notes. He goes into detail and shows what Judas did with the money, what happened to the money. And this is actually a fulfillment of prophecy, where the money is going to be used to buy a field. We find that in Jeremiah. Okay, do you guys have anything you want to say about that? Or can we go on to the next one? We're running out of time. I don't know how many more of these I have, but... okay, did Judas buy a field with money from betraying Jesus? Or did he, this is the same one. It just explains more. Luke is making a short resume. Okay, they illustrated the fact that he says everyone in Jerusalem heard about this. So he's going based on what everybody already knows. And you got to remember who Acts is written to. It's written to Theophilus. So he's basing this on, writing this based on what everybody would already have known in that area. Okay. Did Judas die by hanging himself or by falling headlong and bursting asunder? Okay. Who is this? Oh, my gosh. It's the rad. You're right, because they get bloated. I don't know if you see a dead body and it's out in the sun, it's going to bloat. What's that? Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it makes you, it causes a gag reflex is what it does. You're right, it's absolutely terrible. Okay, so let's take a look and see what happens here. We all know Judas hung himself. We know that according to the scripture. But now the other part says that he also fell and then burst asunder, meaning that his insides fell out. Well, there's a couple things that can happen here. I think we've kind of alluded to this, but this is not a contradiction. The reason why is because Judas in Matthew says that he died by hanging himself. But if you look at Luke says that he fell and then died when his innards fell out. So what can happen here? You could have the emphasizing of two different parts of this episode, where you have the beginning, he hangs himself, so he's dead. But then as the body rots and bloats, you can have right here. I wrote this part in here. The head can. Let's say if the head starts to. If you're hanging there, how long are you going to be hanging there? If you're hanging there for a couple of days, can your body decay where the head is going to become detached because of decay? Okay, so if you're hanging and then your body falls and you're bloated, can your body burst open? Yes. So this is exactly what can happen. He was on the rope for a couple of days, and then when the rope finally broke, or came untied, or the head popped off, and the body fell, it can burst asunder. So this is not a contradiction. One's describing what happened at the beginning, and the other one is describing what happened to the body itself. So Mary puts both of them happen, and it's true. Go ahead, Rad. Yeah. And Paul mentioned before, it was, what part are you going to emphasize? Some people emphasize one idea over the other. Okay, let's go back to this one. All right, here's another one. Was the wording on the cross, as Matthew 27:37 says, Mark 36:26, and Luke 23:38 and John 19 all seem to have different wording. So let's look at what Matthew says. Let me open up Matthew here. Matthew 27:30. Come on. Matthew 27:37 says, above his head, they placed the written charge against him. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Okay, so remember that. Jesus, the King of the Jews. Mark 15:26. Mark 15:26. Where did it go? 15. Come on. 26. The King of the Jews is what they wrote according to Mark. So Matthew says, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Mark says, the King of the Jews. Now, could Mark be right and say it said the King of the Jews? And it also say, okay, Matt? Okay, Matthew says, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Mark says, the King of the Jews. So is that a contradiction? Okay, well, this is where you got to have perfect wording here, according to the Muslims, because we know the Quran's been perfectly preserved. We know. Okay, if you ever see somebody that's good Lord, can we get back on this topic, please? How did we get on this? Guys, stop. All right, so these guys are bad. All right, so Luke 23:28 says, 23, this is the King of the Jews. Matthew says, this is Jesus, King of the Jews. And then Mark says, the King of the Jews. Is this really a contradiction? Okay, John reads, it says, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. You know, this is what desperation looks like. That's a contradiction. Darcy put it right, in Rye. Exactly. Jack in the Box, who is this guy? That is so wrong. Presticles. That's funny, Jack. Oh no. Say it's not so. Well, okay, let me ask you a question, Isa. If you have one book of the Bible that says that Jesus was crucified, that the Romans took him out, they had him crucified, he does a whole bunch of things on the cross and then dies on the cross, and then you have him buried. And then you have another book of the Bible that says that he was not crucified, he did not die, but it just only made it look like he died. Would you consider that book to be reliable? Well, this is I understand what your point is, Isa, but I think that there also has to be, even if it is a religious text, you would still want consistency there. You wouldn't want it to be internally contradictory, making two separate statements and wanting both of those statements to be true, even though they obviously contradict one another. So there has to be some type of reason for that. And you do have to have some type of consistent exegesis where you're interpreting what they're saying accurately based on what the intent of the author was, based on what the facts were at that time. So there's all kinds of different perspectives, but I would not want a book to say that Jesus was crucified and then in another part, another gospel, saying that he was not crucified. That would be a contradiction. And I wouldn't want them to be contradictory. Okay. And what type of response do you get when you do that? They probably lock you up and put you in an insane asylum. Okay, so let's take a look at this passage. I wanted to make sure that I understood what the Bible said in this, because there are things that are added to the King of the Jews, Jesus of Nazareth. This is Jesus, the King of the. And so there are things added to it, but you know it doesn't they don't contradict it, because it says what? Jesus, the King of the Jews. Just because they don't include other things does not make them contradictory. So you can just look at all of we went through these, and some of them include all of them include King of the Jews, but I think one of them only said, I think it was Mark, which is the which you would expect, because Mark is the cliff notes of the gospel message. This is what you would find in the others. Okay, let's see. Did Jesus both pray or not pray to the Father to prevent the crucifixion? Again, this is I didn't finish this, so I'm not even going to go to there. I'm sorry, guys. I was telling you guys at the beginning of the show, I got in last night after driving for 3 straight days, and I had to put together a Sunday school lesson this morning, and I didn't get that last one all cleaned up, and I apologize for that. If you guys want to do more of these, well, you're exactly right. But my dad had several guns that I had to bring back, and I didn't want to have to check them on an airplane. So I thought maybe I'd bring them. Yeah, I'm running guns across state lines. Yeah, I'm going to get arrested is what's going to happen. But all kinds of other things that I brought back. Did you see my new friends that I brought back here behind me? I brought those things. Yeah, I got 3 new pigs, 3 little pigs. Yeah. Well, my grandfather was a pig farmer, and so my dad used to make fun of it by having little pig figurines because he absolutely hated pig farming. The smell itself is terrible. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, we're going to call it a day. I was gone for 10 days and the lawn didn't get mowed. And so I got to get out there, and the queen of Kafiristan is out there doing the trimming and other work. And my job is to mow. So I got to go get on the Kaffir mower and mow this Hamajama. I'm going to wear a mask, I think, because if I get out there and I'll have a sneezing fit on the lawnmower. And that's never been fun. Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. It was the queen flew up to Albuquerque. And so when I'm coming back, the first day I drove, I got to Albuquerque and I picked her up that night. And she rode the last 2 days coming back. She drove part of the way. I don't know what that means. Is this a song? It's Bugs Bunny. Okay, I don't get out much. I'm sorry. You guys throw all these things at me that they just go poof. I'm starting to feel like I was a deprived child or something where I didn't watch enough cartoons. I didn't listen to enough music. I didn't watch enough movies or whatever. You guys, you haven't seen that movie? No, I haven't seen that movie. I'm sorry. Anyway, okay, everybody in chat today, thank you again so much for coming and participating and policing up some of our trolls. Who was that one troll that was here at the beginning? It was that guy's name. The last Adam. Okay, yeah, and I appreciate you policing up some of the things that they were saying there. And also, Mr. Aladdin, I don't know, maybe he emailed me or sent me a Skype, because normally when he gets on here and then he gets pushed out of the chat. He sends me, oh, he did. Okay. Look at here. Aladdin's here. He says, it's right here, just in case you don't believe me. There it is. I was trying to start conversation with you and your group refuting your claim with respect, but you didn't have the courage to read my comment and then put me on time out. Shame on you. Shame on you to put your teacher. That poor guy, I would like to have, he was on the show, I've had him on the show before, but he sits there and screws around and chat. Maybe I'd just send him like the link and just let him come on and let him talk. I mean, it isn't like he's, well, it's, and I've always found that when we let these guys on and let them talk, that can do more than anything of us sitting here trying to refute them. Just let them talk. Let them say what's on their mind. Let them say what they believe. And when they do, it comes out. Even that, the Yahya, the Islam, the Islam Defender. He doesn't like to be called Yahya Snow. Yahya the Islam Defender. I don't know. Is it the same guy? Is it the same guy? Okay. Well, I mean, even he, you know, starts talking about, yeah, you're all, you know, pieces of crap. And yeah. Well, this is what I'm saying. If you let them talk and let them express how they really feel, these things come out, and it's absolutely priceless. Okay, again, appreciate everybody that participated today. I pointed out in chat earlier, like, subscribe, hit the like button, and do something else. I don't know. Go out there and play with your YouTube and share. Share. I know I can never get that right. I don't know why. But I appreciate y'all being here. And Danny, don't forget me. Make sure you ask God Logic if you would come Tuesday. And if not, then I'm going to do something. We'll do something else. If he's busy, I get that. So I'm not going to. But he said that he would be willing to come on the show someday. All right. God bless y'all. And we will see you on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time here on the Cross and the Crescent. Y'all take care. Kufar Akbar, exactly. you know, I actually saw a sign coming back that said, "Let's go, Brandon." It was a billboard sign.